Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Not much, Nick. Currently another beautiful snowy day in New York. Currently getting rocked by another Northeastern. Trapped in my house. Hopefully I'm trapped here for a couple of days because I would like to do nothing.
Yes, another snowstorm in the Northeast. But if you need something to do, listen to the OTG pods. Plenty on the OTG Podcast Network. And you can listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com. And now we'll be airing on Dash Radio.
Just threw you a Dwayne Wade alley-oop.
Yes. But let's get started with Western Conference teams that are really surprising us. And that's the New Orleans Pelicans and Portland Trail Blazers. We'll start with the Pelicans. You know, everyone, when DeMarcus Cousins went down, it was like, you know, is this team even going to make the playoffs? They made the trade for Mirotić. You know, things we were like, all right, they'll probably squeeze into a late seed. Next thing you know, nine-game win streak, fourth in the West, one game behind third place. Anthony Davis on this stretch has just been a monster, averaging around 37 points, 14 rebounds, close to three steals, three blocks. You know, just a huge season from Anthony Davis. What have you saw from the Pelicans that has really surprised you on this nine-game winning streak?
Well, first, like you just said, have to piggyback off the fact that myself included thought this team was dead. The minute DeMarcus Cousins went down, I thought this team was dead. Obviously, they went out and they traded for Mirotić. They ended up signing Emeka Okafor. It's been solid for them. And this team has really flourished without DeMarcus Cousins, which is very weird to say because I don't think anyone, especially not you or I, predicted it. I know Preston Ellis are Pelicans guy for off the glass. I'm sure he didn't expect it, but I love watching his Twitter while the Pelicans are on this win streak because you could just tell by his tweets that he's excited. And him being a huge Pelican guy, I don't even think he expected a run like this. But like you mentioned, Anthony Davis has been ridiculous. Some videos last night against him versus the Clippers, he had some like cheat code type of plays. He was hitting deep threes, some ridiculous blocks. This has been a phenomenal stretch. The Pelicans, you know, they're striving. No one, even when DeMarcus Cousins was healthy, thought the Pelicans could be a four seed in the West. And now without him, they're sitting at fourth in the West, 9-1 in their last 10 games, nine wins in a row. They've been phenomenal.
Yeah, they really have. And like you mentioned, it hasn't just been Anthony Davis. Obviously, Cousins has been out, but Drew Holiday's really stepped up. Mirotić has done some nice things. Guys like Etuan Moore, you know, they've got some nice contributions from guys we didn't expect. And like we said, going even into the season with Cousins on the roster, we thought this would be more of a lower seed type team. We didn't think there'd be any chance at home court advantage in the playoffs.
No, we didn't. And the piggyback, I ain't piggybacking. Drew Holiday has been fantastic. You mentioned him just now on that list. A stat I saw earlier today, he currently has the best on-off net rating per 100 possessions in the NBA at 15.8. And the people right behind him are Victor Oladipo, Joel Embiid, Antetokounmpo, Jimmy Butler, and his teammate Mirotić are the only guys behind him. But he has the best on-off net rating of any player in the NBA. Last night he had 17 assists with, I think, you know, 19 points or whatever. He's been great. And with DeMarcus Cousins going down, he looks like he's finally finding more of a – you know, he was kind of the question mark with DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. He was trying to find himself within the offense. And with DeMarcus Cousins gone, as shitty as that is, Drew Holiday has really found himself again within the offense.
Yeah, and it's a huge plus. But let's get back to Anthony Davis. Obviously, this has been a huge stretch for him, but all season long, he's been big time. Second in player efficiency rating, block percentage, he's sixth in the league. Win shares, he's third in the league. Offensive win shares, fifth. Defensive win shares, fourth. So has Anthony Davis kind of entered his name in the MVP conversation, or is it still James Harden for sure?
No, he's in it. And actually, you know, I mean, James Harden, I think you and I are both in agreement on this, is the MVP of this league. And even it doesn't matter really what anyone else does. James Harden has almost solidified himself as the MVP because of how close he was last year, how great he has been this year, how great the Rockets have been this year. But, you know, Anthony Davis, you can make the case, is, you know, runner up or even third place right now in the MVP race. Obviously, LeBron's been solid in Cleveland, but Cleveland has just not been that good. And this Pelicans team has had a lot of adversity, and through it all, Anthony Davis has remained, You know, he's gotten better as the season's progressed. Like you mentioned, the numbers. You know, he had a stretch where he had, you know, 40 and 20 a few games. He gets several blocks a game. He does literally everything for that Pelicans team. And this last recent stretch where the Pelicans have been striving and they're currently fourth in the West, I don't think you can have his name in the conversation.
Yeah, I think I would probably put him at the runner-up right now just for the fact that, like, he's literally putting up stats that are, like, half of the team's overall stats for the game in terms of, like you said, 40-plus points, 20-plus rebounds, some blocks, some assists, some steals in there. He's doing it pretty efficiently as well, especially with no Cousins getting a lot of attention. So it's been impressive. But like you said, I think James Harden, the fact that he was – I don't want to say robbed, but he should have won maybe last year, or he had the possibility of winning last year and then 2 years ago against Steph Curry. So I think that kind of helps his cause. And then just obviously the Rockets – having a historical season. Unless, you know, the Pelicans could continue this win streak and do something crazy, I think it's Harden's to lose. But AD's definitely been in there, and this is definitely what people wanted to see from him, you know, maybe a year or two ago, and now he's finally getting into that MVP-type player role that we expected from him when all the hype was there.
For sure, and I just want to say one more stat for Anthony Davis. I'm not obviously a big stat guy, but I have a few. These two stink out to me. First off, his PER is 28.7, which is the second highest of his career, and he currently has his best career true shooting percentage at 61.6. So it just shows that he's, you know, obviously 24, only 24, Nick. This yeah. He's still a. This isn't even prime Anthony Davis. Which is ridiculous to think about, but he's been great across the board.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, this is even, you know, Anthony Davis is probably just entering his prime, getting into that real basketball groove. And you mentioned Preston and him being so excited. And I think overall for the Pelicans franchise and organization, having a winning streak like this and this type of hype after having such bad news with DeMarcus Cousins is just great for the team. And I think it really helps them in terms of, you know, positive momentum in the future for keeping Anthony Davis and having a competing team.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this is going to also, you know, Anthony Davis and the Pelicans haven't been in the playoffs since 2014 to 2015 season. And as of right now, even though the West is, you know, crazy tight and anything can happen, the Pelicans, as of right now, look like a team that will for surely be playing in, you know, late April, early May.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously really early, and the Pelicans are in the fourth seed. We don't even know if they're going to hold on to it. But could you see the Pelicans advancing to the second round? Is that a possibility now, especially with the banged up West when you have teams like San Antonio missing possibly Kawhi, even though there's reports he'll come back? Minnesota possibly missing Jimmy Butler, OKC really struggling, Denver being a little bit inconsistent. Could you see New Orleans in the second round?
Yes, I for sure can. And it's a combination of everything you just said, plus the fact that you still have, you know, Anthony Davis. I've always thought this, you want to get into the playoffs and then you want your superstar to pretty much, you know, take over and carry the load. Because as we know, in the playoffs, the games get, you know, a little bit slower, they get a little bit tighter, and you rely on those superstars. Anthony Davis is one of those superstars. There's no one in the league who can guard him. You can only try and minimize the impact he has on the game. And let's say right now this playoffs start, you have Pelican Spurs first round. It wouldn't be a cakewalk for the Pelicans by any means, because we know what the Spurs are. Kawhi Leonard is kind of lingering. He could be back. But, you know, if they had a matchup with the Timberwolves who were banged up, I mean, the Thunder don't look scary at this point in time. Like you said, the Nuggets are inconsistent. If they get the right, you know, 3-6 matchup, 4-5 matchup, or even if they're a 5 seed versus a 4 seed, you know, there's a ton of matchups that could go in their favor.
How important is home court for the Pelicans to advance? Do you think they need to get, you know, a fourth or third seed to really have a shot at advancing, or they could do it in the fifth spot?
They could do it in the fifth spot. If you look at their record, they're 17-12 at home, and they're 20-14 on the road. You know, they're over 500 on both sides. You know, if you look at other teams, you know, the Spurs have a losing record on the road. The Timberwolves have a losing record on the road. The Thunder, losing record on the road. Nuggets, losing record on the road. Jazz, losing record on the road. All these teams don't play well on the road. The Pelicans are one of the best teams on the road. That makes a huge impact for them, especially if they get a home court. But if they don't get a home court, it doesn't look like it's going to faze them.
It's a good take on the Pelicans. And I mean, I'm kind of excited to see what they can do and what happens after this winning streak ends. Because I think, and like you said, I think matchup's big. Obviously, if they play the Spurs with Kawhi, that's a hard matchup. For some reason, I feel like a good matchup would be OKC. I don't know why. I just feel like Anthony Davis could be an issue there, because as good as Steven Adams is, he's not going to be able to guard, you know, Anthony Davis, and Paul George is not big enough to guard Anthony Davis. So they don't really have a stopper for him. I think that'd be an interesting series, and obviously the inconsistency there. But talking about another guy who's probably starting to enter the superstar conversation, I guess you'd have to say, and that's Dame Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers. Another winning streak for them, 8-game winning streak. On this winning streak, Dame's averaging over 30 a game. He's another guy that's sixth in the league in win shares, putting up huge numbers. And it's just, you know, he's just like, when you think Blazers, you think Dame Lillard. So what has been the most impressive thing about Dame in the Blazers on this winning streak?
The efficiency of Lillard. Obviously, Lillard's a high volume shooter. Him and McCollum, as we know, pretty much take up like what? I'm just guessing here, but like 70% of the offense probably on almost any night. Those two, they lean on those guys heavily, obviously. And if you look at the last 10 games for Lillard, 50 points, 39, 44, 24, 40, 26, 35, 20, 39, 37. I think he's averaging like right around 38 per game or 37 per game. He's got, you know, the best field goal percentage currently in the last 10 games. He's been great. And for some reason, I don't know. We used to think when Lillard got snubbed, the second half of the season is when he went off. Well, he didn't even get snubbed this year and he still went off. So it has now become a thing, you know, like Kyrie in his untucked jersey. Lillard in the second half of his, or post All-Star game, Lillard is phenomenal. It's whenever it's near playoff time, near crunch time, the Blazers are making a push. Lillard somehow becomes a, like you said, almost a borderline superstar. And another guy whose name should be in the bottom level of the MVP conversation, probably. I'm not saying he's up there, you know, top three, but, you know, top 10, he should be in at least the top 10 of MVP voting for at least what he's done the first half of the year to keep the Pelican. Oh my God, the Blazers. in the race, and then what he's done the second half to make the Blazers a 3 seed right now in the West and on an 8-game winning streak.
I agree. I think this is another team, like it makes us look kind of bad, but the Blazers were a team that I don't think were super exciting going to the regular season. You know, you didn't think it would really be possible for them to be a top, you know, top 4 seed. Obviously, a lot of that is because of injuries in the West, but still, Dame Lillard continuing to get better and just this overall team effort. Who else on this team has, you know, impressed you other than Dame during this winning streak?
I mean, no one guy really sticks out to me, if I'm being honest. CJ McCollum obviously has been solid, consistent. He had that 50-point game a couple weeks back against the Bulls, where he was phenomenal in that first quarter, especially. But guys like Aminu, he missed a couple of games earlier this season. He's almost like their third option, it feels like. He's one of their most consistent guys. He plays good defense. Evan Turner has been a little bit better as of recently. I think honestly, the best player outside of McCollum and Lillard, and it's funny for me to say this, is Shabazz. He's been phenomenal off that bench as a sixth man. When Lillard missed some time, he stepped up in the starting role and he played really well for them. At times, if you watch them, they run a 3-guard set with McCollum, Nadia. What's his last name? Shabazz Napier. Yep. Am I saying it right?
Shabazz Napier.
Yeah, Napier, McCollum, Lillard with either Aminu or, you know, some power forward with Nurkic. And that five right there has been really effective for them, especially late in games. Shabazz also had a crazy step back the other night where he had a big-time shot. So I think it's just the fact that there's been role players stepping up for them, because that's been the biggest issue with the Blazers, is the fact that they always have relatively good defense, a top 15 to 10 defense, and their offense struggles because they only have two guys. Well, when other guys contribute, then you can see Lillard kind of be more comfortable, and he doesn't have to force shots. He can just take shots that he's given.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, I think, you know, obviously Dame and CJ doing their thing, but the role players stepping up, guys shooting a better percentage from three makes life a lot better for the team. And I think just overall the whole squad buying in. And like you said, Napier, that's a guy like in Miami, they drafted him for LeBron. LeBron left. It really didn't work out in Miami. I think he went to Orlando for a bit, nothing much there. And then he comes to Portland, really worked on his game. And he's had a couple of highlight games this season where he's really helped Portland win games. So I think he's a guy, like you said, kind of been impressive in having, you know, a guy on the bench that you can rely on. But moving on from the West, let's take a look at the Eastern Conference playoff picture. there's not really like one seed to talk about because there's so many openings. You know, there's not one spot where we can really lock in right now. But I will ask you, do you think the eight teams that are in the playoff right now are the eight teams that will be in the playoffs when they start in April?
Let me look at my notes, Nick. And this is word for word what I have. The Eastern Conference seeds are locked unless Reggie Jackson from Detroit returns. This is it. You're looking at the playoff picture unless Reggie Jackson comes back and the Pistons get together.
It better be a supercharged Reggie Jackson too.
Yeah. These eight are locked in. The seeding, obviously, I'm sure will change and we'll see teams move around. But the Hornets had a slight opportunity and they're back to going towards the bottom of the East. The Pistons are just a disappointment. And, I mean, none of us thought the Knicks or the Hawks or the – no offense, the Nets. No, we didn't think they were going to make a run for the eight seed.
Yeah, I agree. I think these eight teams are pretty much locked in. Detroit's been really disappointing. After having a really nice start when Blake got there, it's just like things haven't worked out. There was always a question about the surrounding pieces anyways. You know, not having wings, not having a point guard, especially Jackson being out. But having to rely that much on a Reggie Jackson isn't necessarily great anyways. So, and then like you mentioned, Charlotte's probably in just what's probably one of the worst positions of being in the league where you're almost in the playoffs, but not really. And then you just end up getting another, you know, lottery pick, but not a top five pick that really changes your team. So they're in a weird situation, but I agree. I think the eight teams in there right now, I think we'd agree that obviously Boston or Toronto is going to get the one seed. It's favoring towards Toronto right now, but you never know. I think that three seed is really intriguing. That three seed, like, do you think your Pacers can grab that three seed? Is that a real possibility for them?
Yes, it for sure is. I have a lot of Pacer thoughts. but right now, as of how they're playing, especially because, for example, their last win against the Bucks where they won 92-89, it was a game where Victor Oladipo didn't even play well. And the Pacers weren't winning games when he was out of the lineup. And when he's in the lineup, it still at times feels like he has to be, you know, borderline superstar Oladipo to win at nights, at times. And he played very poorly. And Bogdanović, your ex Brooklyn Net, dropped 29 and was the MVP of the game and was a huge factor in winning the game. So when you have wins like that over another team in the East who's competing, and I mean, on paper, I think we can agree that the Milwaukee Bucks are probably a lot better than the Pacers on paper. But the Pacers this entire year have just defied the odds. They play great team basketball. Lance is pesky off the bench, and Oladipo runs that first unit. And with the way they've played against the Cavaliers, they've had a couple of good wins against them. The Raptors kicked the crap out of us, but the Celtics we've played decently. The Wizards, obviously, we've beaten. There's no team in the East that terribly frightens me, especially because we've handled the Bucks now two times in a row. The Sixers to me are like the only Sixers and Raptors to me are the biggest threats to the Pacers in the East right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think you made a great point about the Pacers. It's not like they're super talented, but all the guys are kind of playing better than expected. They're playing good team ball and the Pacers don't really tend to beat themselves. You really have to beat the Pacers, you know, like you have to actually go out and beat them and win the game. They're not going to just hand it to you. So I think that's one thing, especially with a lot of the inconsistency in the East. I mean, it's a real possibility. In Washington, obviously, we don't really know what's up with John Wall when he's going to fully be back. Philly being one of those young, inconsistent teams, but they're starting to get it together a little bit. I think the additions of Ariasova and Bellinelli should really help that bench unit. Give them some much-needed shooting when you play Embiid and Simmons, who obviously Simmons not a shooter, and having a guy like Ersan or Bellinelli out there really helps the spacing.
We saw last night, I believe, Bellinelli had a solid, I believe his plus minus was plus 11 when he was on the floor. He had 11 points or whatever. And I agree with everything you just said about the Sixers. I think that once they get those guys more integrated within the offense, Ben Simmons is going to utilize the hell out of those guys. And we know what Embiid is when he's healthy and on the floor. And he's been, you know, knock on wood, he's been healthy as can be. So, the Sixers to me are the one team that can make a run in this Eastern Conference, especially. Yeah. And I want to say one last thing about the Pacers. Not that I believe he should be coach of the year, because I think that's between Dwayne Casey and D'Antoni. But Nate McMillan deserves to be in the top five for coach of the year voting, because he's completely defied the odds also with how this team was projected, obviously. And he deserves a ton of credit. especially because I was really critical on them after last season because of how bad they were, or yeah, inconsistent they were.
And it kind of makes the players from last season look a lot worse. Instead of, you know, it makes the players this year look like they're really buying to the system, and maybe he just needed players that fit a little bit differently. But moving on from there, anything like Milwaukee's been a team that's been kind of, I guess I want to say somewhat confusing. You know, they've been really inconsistent. One game you watch them, they look like, all right, this could really be, you know, a stretch for them where they can move up in the standings. Next thing you know, they lose a few and they're back down at seventh.
I think they're missing Brogdon. I think they're really missing Brogdon. I think they're missing – I think Tony Snell's missed some games too. Obviously, Dellavedova was out. I think they're just missing guys that are a big part. I mean, Jason Terry has to play a lot more minutes than I think they would want him to play, even though he's had some, you know, vintage Jet moments as of late. But, you know, that team needs shooting. You know, Middleton can only do so much. He's very streaky. Even though he's had a really good year, there's too many games where he kind of goes – he disappears, and Jabari Parker's still getting his knee underneath him and getting, you know, used to the NBA grind. I think they're just really missing some of their shooters.
Yeah, I think the shooting, Brogdon is a great piece, and he's a smart basketball player. So it's not even just the shooting. It's just, you know, the smart plays, filling space, setting back screens, things along those lines. And Miami, and then the defense as well, you're right. And Miami coming, you know, they should be able to, they haven't been playing great basketball, 500 in their last 10 games. I think they'll probably still squeeze in, but I don't think they'll really scare anybody in the first round.
No, it's funny because I keep an eye on Miami for whatever reason. I'm not really sure why. I always enjoy Miami. We'll talk about that with the next segment. But since they got Wade back, this team has actually taken a step backwards. And I don't want to say it's Wade's fault really, but I mean, Wade has played relatively well since his return in Miami. I know the first couple of games were a little scratchy. But he's obviously the game against the Lakers. He had the game winner for that kid who passed, for the kid who was killed in that horrific, terrible shooting in Florida, which was obviously like the NBA's the greatest for storylines, as we've already mentioned. But that team hasn't really found a gel with Wade because Wade is, you know, playing his usual 25 minutes off the bench. And I think that's just kind of been a ripple within the chemistry that they have to figure out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely like you don't really know what's going on in Miami. It's just so much inconsistency. One guy will play a good night. There's just so many guys, and they're all in like this semi like starter core piece role where like you don't know which guy who's actually supposed to be doing what. You know, it's supposed to be like a different guy every night, but nobody knows which guy's really going to step up. And Wade's like, you know, he's willing to step up, but is he the best guy to step up in this moment at this age? You know, who knows?
Yeah, one thing I want to this is just something that I'm looking at since January. I mean, man, you can go back even farther, Nick. They in their last, I'm gonna say 15 games, they don't have a single. They have one. No, that's a win. They don't have a single loss by more than 8 points in the last month. Their last double digit loss was in the middle of January.
That's interesting. I mean, they're in, yeah. I think, and I saw a stat yesterday where I believe they were one of the top five teams in, you know, games decided by like 5 points or less. So just a lot of close games for Miami.
Their biggest loss was to the Rockets on January 22nd by 9 points. That was their biggest loss recently.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably the fact that they don't really have a closer. You know, Dragic is a great player. He's more so of a playmaker. Hassan Whiteside's not really that offensive type of player, and they have Wade somewhat in that role. But like we mentioned, you know, Wade's not that player at this age.
Yeah, I actually misspoke. The Lakers game, they lost by 15. But besides that, every game else besides the Rockets one has been by less than 10 points, which is phenomenal for a team that's been struggling.
So that's a lot of credit to Spoelstra, too. He doesn't really get beat. His teams always compete. But like you mentioned, let's move on to our next segment. And just a reminder, you can catch the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play. But talking about watching and listening, we're going to talk league pass rankings. Obviously, we did our preview during the offseason, the NBA Outlet preview series. You know, we mentioned our league pass rating for each team, but we're going to revisit that. Obviously, injuries, players improving. Let's hear your top five league pass teams right now.
Now, I just want to clarify, these are the teams that I enjoy watching, right?
This is Corey's ranking. This is not anybody else's ranking, but Corey's.
All right. Thank God. You know, getting me a little worried because I was like, either people are going to criticize the hell out of me and say I ain't watching any of these teams or what. All right. So these are my top five. Fifth is the Boston Celtics. Fourth, the Philadelphia 76ers. Third, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Second, the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then first, of course, is the Indiana Pacers.
All right. So I have some similar ones on there. I definitely see Philly. Like, Philly's a fun team to watch. Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are like a walking highlight. Golden State's still on there for me. Like, I just enjoy watching, like, you know, the Warriors will, like, blow, like, a 15-point lead, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere the other team thinks they're going to do good, and then Kevin Durant just goes on, like, a single run by himself and scores 8 points. I just, like, still get joy in watching the Warriors in the third quarter where, you know, you see, like, Steph Curry, Durant, or Klay just working some magic. So they'll be on my list. OKC as well. I think there's just a lot of storylines, and, like, they're always in really interesting games. It's either, like, Westbrook's really pissed off at Embiid, Melo's having a terrible game, or he's complaining about not getting help defense. And then Houston's number two for me just because I think James Harden's a ton of – I, like, a lot of people just hate James Harden. And, like, I still don't really understand why people get so mad about him drawing fouls. Like, I brought up this point in the OTG account once. Like, we don't get mad at Aaron Rodgers when he draws teams offsides. Like – he's just playing the rules to his advantage. I mean, I can see why it's annoying, but I don't think he's like 0% fun to watch because he throws a ton of oops. And then for my personal, obviously the Nets, I always watch sometimes more than once, which is kind of crazy considering the record.
Gotta show love to the home teams.
Yeah, for sure. But any other team, what team do you hate watching?
What team do I hate watching?
Or what team, like, have you either you hate watching or you feel like you've watched the least amount this season?
You cut out, like, with the last part.
What team do you think you, like, it could either be a team you hate or a team that you believe you've watched, like, the least amount this season? Like, you really have only watched them when maybe they face the Pacers or not even.
Do you really want to know what team that is? Because it's really bad. It shouldn't be this team.
It's the Warriors.
Oh, yeah. I was, when you said the Warriors on your list, I was literally sitting here thinking, when was the last time I watched a Warriors game? I've watched every OKC Warriors game. I watched both Cavs Warriors game. I watched the Warriors Rockets game. Like, I haven't watched the Warriors unless they're playing, you know, a top-notch team.
I'll say this too. I don't watch usually the full game, but I will, like, always tune in a little bit just to watch for, like, a quarter or something. Like I said, just, like, some of the plays. I like watching the crazy runs that go on. It just, like, doesn't seem real. But I can see why people don't want to watch because you already know the outcome 90% of the time. Probably more like 98% of the time.
And also to people listening, also my list, you know, it's kind of not – it's Eastern Conference bias. I just don't watch a lot of Western Conference games. For the most part, there's, like, a few teams I watch. Like, I enjoy watching the Utah Jazz, the Blazers, and the Thunder. So, like, those three teams in particular, like, I'll always watch the condensed games for them. But, like, for other teams, unless they're playing, like, an East Coast matchup, I generally just don't see a lot of them because I just don't stay up, you know, late.
It's
1:30 in the morning to me is a little bit unappealing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely tough, especially when they have, like, Sacramento and Phoenix on at 10:30. Like, yeah, I don't think a ton of people are staying up for that game. But, I mean, I do like to it's nice when they give them, like, the central time starts or, like, the 8 or 9 o'clock starts. It's not as bad. But when the 10:30 ones definitely are tough sometimes, especially if you have to work early the next day.
Yeah, which both of us generally have to do.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes, though, if it's a good game, I'll just make sure I got a coffee in the fridge to go.
Who did the Blazers play? Oh, Blazers, Lakers. I stayed up for that game. I got hooked late, which was unfortunate. Like, I literally had texted everyone I was texting and said, I'm going to bed. And then within 30 minutes, I was tweeting again and then getting text messages saying, I thought you went to bed. And I was like, yeah, basketball, it happens.
Yeah, I think one thing that happens to me sometimes is, like, maybe I won't be I've already, you know, closed up for the night in terms of, like, I watched two or three games. It might be a Saturday. We've, you know, did a lot of tweets on OTG Twitter. I might not watch the last game. But then next thing I know, I'm switching over from, like, my Xbox to the TV. And it's a fourth quarter game. There's, like, 2 minutes left. It's 1 point. Like, you can't not watch. So it's like sometimes it just gets you at the right moment.
But that wraps it up for today. Corey, as always, thank you for hopping on. You can listen to the NBA, like I mentioned, on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play. Also, make sure you check out all the OTG pods we have. Like I mentioned, Corey bringing back Full Access Hoops, Brooklyn Buzz, Celtics Express, The Bird Calls, We Believe in Magic, JBT, Players Watch, Shuttleworth Initiative. You know, the list goes on and on. Plenty of pods, different takes.
We're a growing podcast network. And I just want to say one thing about the Full Access Hoops podcast. It's just 15 to 20 minutes. It's 15 minutes of basketball talk, and it's probably going to be 5 minutes of Walking Dead talk. It's going to be out every Monday from here on out. Give me some listens.
Yeah, and definitely, like with any of the pods, rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. Let us know on Twitter. If you don't know the specific Twitter account, you can always reach out to OTG Basketball.